Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Rosie. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me back.
Happy to have you back. So tell us what you've been up to since we last chat.
Well, it's been prime pandemic hours, as I'm sure you're all aware. So I've just been, you know, riding out the pandemic in the ways that I think a lot of us are. A lot of Zoom calls, a lot of long walks, and buying a lot of nap dresses online. I don't know. Have you heard about the nap dress phenomenon?
Yes. It's like Instagram influencing. Like, the Olive and June mani pedis and nap dresses. Like, oh my gosh. Yes. Instagram peak influencing.
Yes. I've been taken in. Yes.
So which dresses did you get? Which patterns did you get?
I got three different ones. I got like a blue one that has some sparkles. I got a tartan print. And then I got a black one, which makes me feel like a prairie witch.
Oh, I love this so much. How's the writing going?
It's been really hard, honestly. I think it's like a couple of compound factors. So obviously, the pandemic as a whole. It's really interesting. Like, I turned in the intimacy experiment to my editor February 28th, 2020. So right before pandemic hit. And at the time I was like, okay, well, this is great. I'll just take like a month or two off, because I had gone right from the roommate into the intimacy experiment with not really any kind of break. So I was super looking forward to a little bit of downtime, you know, just when you're coming off a project like that. And that 1 or 2 months of downtime turned into like a year of downtime, which I really wasn't expecting. But I didn't work on a full length novel during that time. I worked on a couple like fanfic kind of things for myself, but nothing near like what I had planned. But then I don't even remember. A couple of months ago, we sold the third and fourth book to Berkeley in a different universe. So since then, I have been working on a new project and it's going okay, but it's hard. I don't know if I'm sure you've heard of authors talk about like second book syndrome. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. So more, what's your experience like? Because it's so personal. So I think it's important to just share that if you feel comfortable. If you don't feel comfortable,
yeah. No, I was gonna say, like, for me, I don't think I had traditional second book syndrome with the intimacy experiment, because I wrote it before the roommate came out. So it was like, I think a lot of times what hinders people is that they are dealing with the reception to the first book, and whether that was good or bad, you're now like writing with some sense of the public response. And I didn't really have that. But now working on the third book, I am aware of like how people have responded to the work. And so I feel like I'm getting second book syndrome with the third book, of just, you have to reorient yourself, because it's goes from writing for yourself as the North Star to kind of this tidal wave of feeling like you want to appease audiences. And then you go through the whole 5 stages of grief of like, that's not possible. So trying to hold on and reorient to a place where I am writing for myself again is like a whole journey.
Yeah, I think it's like so important. I realized this, and I've seen this in my own experience with the podcast. There've been waves where I was like, I had the podcast grew a lot and it's great. But the reality is I lost myself thinking like, oh, how would I piece, you know, I get bad reviews, or I get this review, or do one this and do one that. And then it got to the point where I was like, I don't care about any of this stuff. So the podcast audience, I do this podcast for me. I do this because I want to talk to authors and I want to talk to other people and talk about books. But the reality is I don't do this because I want to appease the audience. you know, you want to feed the beast. And it's like, how do you balance both, you know? And I think for writing, it's such a personal issue. It's such a personal journey. Like, you know, the author spends like years, months, you know, in a manuscript and creating these characters for, you know, and you want to be engaged with it. You want to feel like they're exciting for you. If they get bored, like, you don't want to, you know, it's not for to appease the audience, you know, so.
Yeah, I think you just quickly realize, like, you can't win, like, yeah. If that's the rubric that you're using. So reframing is really important to just be able to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, you can make everyone happy and everyone's going to give you like a gold star. Like, you got to do it for you, you know, and, you know, perhaps your editor, like, you know, to tell like, oh, this works, you know, but it's not about like appeasing the masses. It's about like just appealing to you and to perhaps like one reader who's going to feel be seen, you know.
Right. Totally.
So let's see, let's talk about the intimacy experiment. So talk to us about what is the high points of the plot, like, you know, and then we'll chat a little bit more because I did read the book and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so the elevator pitch is that the CEO of a sexy startup and a hot rabbi hashtag join forces to write a course on modern intimacy and then end up using the syllabus that they've created as a guide to fall in love.
Mm-hmm. I love this. So let's talk about the curriculum of modern intimacy, because you take modern dating and you put it into a class, you know, which is a very novel idea. And I feel like, oh, we should have this class, you know, more often. Like, I would sign up for this class as opposed to going and doing a bunch of dating apps. What was the process like of coming up with the curriculum and like coming up with the plot points that will hit the different character beats? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think the idea came from the point of just realizing that it's a little strange that we don't have courses in this kind of thing, at least not sort of scalable, like widely accessible ones, because it's just such a prevalent modern issue, you know what I mean? And like, I think with the pandemic too, like dating has gotten more complicated than it even was before. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about ways that Ethan and Naomi as characters would enter into one another's spheres, since they are obviously like quite different at first glance. And, you know, this idea of modern teaching and interpretation and community building felt like the right intersection for them. In terms of coming up with the syllabus, it was, you know, I think some of it was drawn from experiences that I've had or that my friends have had that we've had to navigate together. Mm-hmm. And also just, again, issues that I felt were important in terms of developing intimacy that don't get explored a ton. It was funny, like one of the lectures is about texting and how important it is to figure out how to flirt via text, how to interpret signals via text, because it sounds kind of silly maybe, but that really is like a core tenet of our modern courtship rituals. So it was kind of fun to just have this idea of someone facilitating and holding space for discussions around that at scale, because very often it's us talking to our friends and it's sort of a communication loop. Whereas I think it would be really valuable to be able to learn from people who are having experiences that are really different from yours. So maybe people who are in a different age bracket or come from a different background, things like that. So that's what I liked the idea of having. It's not just a lecture in a traditional source as you kind of go into them. It's usually like Naomi setting up some kind of framework for discussion and then opening it up and facilitating different people sharing perspectives or asking questions, which I think is a more realistic way to think about navigating intimacy, because it's never going to be one size fits all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that it was like there was a community building within the process. Like there was a discussion, there was like an opportunity for us to look at the topic and think about how does it work for me and how does it work for, or how does it work for my friends? Like I've heard, you know, like my friend got broken up by a post-it or blah, 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 blah. And then having a community discussion about like, you know, feeling like that is part of it. And it's still like, it feeds into intimacy, like in some ways, like it builds like the sense of like, you know, you're not doing this alone. Because I think sometimes like dating feels like, unless you're talking to your friends, you may feel like, am I the only one who, you know, who's stuck with like bad dates all the time?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It can totally be isolating, which is really scary. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think all the more reason to find avenues for these types of interactions to be discussed and for us to learn from one another.
Yes. And I love the setting of the synagogue. In the synagogue, they're struggling with membership and trying to revamp, you know, think about how to get members and retain them and stuff like that. And looking at intimacy is like a way to get draw in the younger members, but also the older members, you know, like as a way to bring in the sense of like community coming back to it. So why the synagogue setting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I knew the original idea was for Ethan to be a rabbi, right? So when I came up with that occupation, obviously along with that comes, you know, a synagogue and a congregation and all of that. Yep. So the idea of a synagogue that's struggling to recruit younger members is very real. You know, there's, you, if you look at any kind of modern data around who's attending synagogues and things like that, like this is an issue that's pretty widely discussed in Jewish communities about how are we creating a bridge so that people come in outside of sort of the common life stages, which tends to be like when you're getting married or when you have children and things like that. So it wasn't a big stretch to have a character navigating that situation, because like I said, it's something that I think the community as a whole is constantly discussing and trying new techniques to figure out. And that's not even honestly specific to Judaism. I think almost every organized religion is struggling to connect to younger generations.
Yeah, I think so. I think I see it from the Catholic Church and my experience, like that's a big part of it. You know, who goes to church is very different from what they want is to go, you know, so it does make a difference. I think if like, you know, looking at creative ideas, like, you know, courses and community building and opportunities for you to connect with one another, you know, I think even the mixtures of like speed dating, like those are ways to, you know, to think about religion as an important part of who you are, because it does represent your values and it does make a difference. So when you're thinking about your partner, like how do they, are you compatible? Do you have the same values? Do you have the same vision for yourself? You know, so it makes sense. So let's talk about Judaism and Naomi's journey. So Naomi is coming back to it, you know, as she connects with Ethan and realizes that, you know, she grew up Jewish, but she felt as an outsider. And then coming back into exploring her religion, you know, within her identity. What was the process like of, you know, getting Naomi to go through that character arc?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Naomi's experience in that sense was sort of inspired by some of my own thoughts and experiences about how, again, like how do you bridge this gap from how you were raised when you were in your parents' household to then being an adult who makes their own choices around practices and traditions and all of that. And, you know, we've, even when we're introduced to Naomi and the roommate, we meet her as someone who is in grad school getting her master's. Like she really loves to learn. And so when she starts interacting with Ethan and having this exposure to different members from his synagogue and things like that, she gets curious. And so she starts kind of digging in to, because a lot of times, again, with these things, it's like you need a bit of a refresh. Mm-hmm. And you also, different communities can be valuable or relevant depending on the time of your life. So I think in Naomi's case, in her early 20s, when she had left her hometown and she was trying to kind of make a name for herself in LA and get settled there, she didn't feel like she could connect with the community in the ways that she later realizes she's able to as, you know, a 30, I think she's 30. Yeah, she's 30. I was like, is she 30 or 31? I think she, but she's 30. So yeah, it's just a different life stage. A lot of this book was definitely inspired by this idea of how we make transitions and reconcile who we've been, who we want to be going forward.
I love this. Yeah. And I love the fact that she was like creative. Like she started with podcasts and books, and then she went to another synagogue to get some classes, you know, so she made this journey her own, that it wasn't just, even though she was like interested in Ethan and interested in like going all this stuff, she still was like, you know, this is my journey, you know, and she said that intention very clearly.
Yeah, it was definitely important for a variety of reasons to not have her exploration of her Jewish identity tied to Ethan or to his synagogue. Like, on the one hand, it would probably be a little bit inappropriate if she was a part of his congregation for him to be dating her. And also, to your point, like, I didn't want this, and you know, Naomi as a character would never really have accepted this idea that she makes any kind of identity choices based on someone else. It really is a self-guided exploration.
Yes. I think that's like the biggest part of it. It was like Naomi was her own person. Like, you know, there's sometimes there's certain characters who are falling in love and like they may lose themselves, but Naomi was like very clear who she was from the get-go. Like from the moment she turned Ethan down and said, like, I'm not gonna do this, to the moment she was like, okay, maybe I'll fall in love. She still was her own, of her own, you know, her own alpha, you know, heroine, you know. So
yeah, I think this book is, you know, you're not like looking at somebody who's completely different from the character you met in the roommate, yeah, but you are digging deeper and understanding more facets than you're exposed to because she is the POV character here.
Yeah, I love this. So what is your favorite trope to write and favorite trope to read?
My favorite trope to write is probably opposites attract. Like I find myself consistently writing characters who at a glance seem like they would never work, or characters who I kind of joke, like, who is the most inconvenient person possible to be attracted to? That's who it is that you're gonna fall for. I just really like the tension that that brings to interactions, and I like the ways that it helps build a plot a lot of times. So that's something I think you can pretty consistently see from me in my writing. Mm-hmm. In terms of reading, I don't know. I am going to say enemies to lovers, and I wish I had like a more creative answer, but it's pretty consistent for me. I like complicated situations that have to be overcome. And you know, when there is some sort of enemy factor, I think that it just makes the love story feel that much more earned for me personally. So that's something if I hear it's like a really good enemies to lovers book, I'm probably gonna follow up and check it out.
Yes, I love it. I love enemies to lovers because the banter, the bickering, the place of like, you're not supposed to like each other, you hate each other, and you know they're gonna get together at the end. So I love this. So what has been a book that you can't stop gushing about?
Oh my gosh, so many. Probably Spoiler Alert by Olivia Dade is one that comes really top of mind because she actually just released the cover for the second book in the series, and it's once again stunning. Mm-hmm. I just really find a lot of comfort in Olivia's writing. She's spectacularly talented, and I just really enjoy the inclusive way that she writes. I think there's a really gentle, warm humor that she has. It's very unique. and spoiler alert, deals with a fan and a actor, and it delves a lot into fandom in a bunch of different ways. And one of the things that Olivia did in spoiler alert is she actually has this custom built fan fiction that she has in between chapters and stuff. And I just think that was so, so talented and awesome to have her stretch her voice in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that book was like so complex. I remember talking to Olivia, I was like, how did you do it? Because it was like world within world, but there's also the B-list movie plots, and then also the fan fiction and the different fan fiction process, the different voices, you know. So it was a really complex book that was like chef's kiss. It was so good, but it was definitely one of those books I'm like, it must have taken a lot of work to get it done.
Totally.
So tell us where you can find you online.
I'm pretty easy to find. I'm on both Instagram and Twitter as @RosieDannon. And then if you want to check out my website for additional information, things like signed copies of my books and stuff like that, it's rosiedannon.com.
Thank you, Rosie, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a delightful conversation as always.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships. to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.